From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Monday, February 2nd. I'm Abby Larico. The new head of emergency management in St. Louis says it could take 2 years to rebuild the city emergency management agency.
There are substantive organizational pieces that have not been in place that need to be in place. SEMA has been underfunded and understaffed since its inception.
STLPR's Rachel Lippman sits down with new SEMA Commissioner Greg Favor coming up after this news on The Gateway. A family is grieving and calling for accountability after Demetria McDial died in custody of the St. Louis City Justice Center this weekend. STLPR's Lucretia Wembley reports the family says they're tired of excuses.
Hours before she was found unresponsive Saturday, McDial's family says she had complained of chest pains. She was taken to a hospital where she was pronounced dead. The family says the 32-year-old mother of six also struggled with mental health issues. McDial's cousin, Cherise Weems, says she believes that's why McDial's complaints weren't taken seriously.
They keep playing everything on being short-staffed. Oh, we don't have enough people here. Oh, we don't have enough people there. And I feel so bad, like I'm hurt behind this real bad.
This is the first death at the jail this year and the 22nd since 2020. City leaders expressed sympathies to McDial's family. I'm Lucretia Wembley, St. Louis Public Radio.
There's no money in this year's St. Louis County Council budget for improvements at the Buzz Westfall Justice Center. The council approved just over $40 million for the jail's budget this year, $1 million less than what jail leaders had hoped for, and it includes cuts to contracted medical care. Jail leaders said last year that at least $36 million would be needed over the next 5 years for maintenance of the 27-year-old building that floods often and has moldy showers. Chris Gron Howard is the budget policy coordinator for the county council.
No, there's no extra money for that right now, because at some point we have to have a much better understanding of exactly what they want to do with the money.
Although that's the case, he says the council is always willing to sit down with the department and help fill gaps. The amount of action in the first month of legal sports betting in Missouri far exceeded expectations, but the state's share of the money was relatively small. The Missouri Gaming Commission says $543 million was wagered in December. That's twice as much as the state estimated for the first month of betting. But the state only collected just over $500,000, money earmarked for education and problem gamblers. The 16 licensed operators offered more than $125 million in free bets and other promotions. Gaming Commission Executive Director Mike Lira says that loss was anticipated and the state will have a better gauge of what to expect in the next 6 months. But House Budget Committee Chair Dirk Deacon called the report sad and told the Missouri Independent that the General Assembly should have taxed sportsbooks more. Missouri Attorney General Catherine Hanaway is calling for a redo of the 2020 census. St. Louis Public Radio's Lily Halloran reports it's one of several demands in a lawsuit launched Friday morning by Hanaway's office against the U.S. Department of Commerce and the Census Bureau.
Hanaway's office argues the 2020 census should be changed to remove people who are in the United States without legal status. The AG also says they shouldn't be included at all in the 2030 census. Louis Capozzi is Solicitor General of Missouri. He says U.S. Supreme Court precedent backs their case.
Our position is that illegal aliens and temporary foreign visitors are not and cannot be deemed domiciled in the United States. Citizens and lawful permanent residents are domiciled, and they can be counted.
The lawsuit claims Missouri would have an extra congressional seat and electoral college vote in 2030 if this change were made. I'm Lily Halloran, St. Louis Public Radio.
On the other hand, though, Washington University law professor Travis Crum says the census has included undocumented immigrants for decades because the Constitution doesn't limit the count to citizens.
There's just this long-standing course of practice that this is legal, and presidents of both parties have run these censuses, and they've not been successfully challenged.
Crum says the suit makes similar arguments to President Trump's birthright citizenship case the U.S. Supreme Court will hear this year. The U.S. Department of Commerce and the Census Bureau could not be immediately reached for comment. And there's new census data, which shows Missouri's population is growing, but at a slower rate than years past. A St. Louis demographic expert says plunging immigration numbers nationwide could spell trouble for the state's growth. St. Louis Public Radio's Kayvon Mansouri has more.
Missouri and Illinois saw population gains in the latest annual U.S. Census Bureau report, continuing a several-year trend of gaining residents. However, nationwide growth is slowing due to declining immigration to the country. Missouri saw its number of new people from outside the country halve from 2024 to 2025. Last year, only 12,000 people immigrated to the state. That's trouble, says St. Louis University professor Ness Sandoval, who says the state depends on international immigration for population growth.
People have to understand, like, 60% of the growth since 2020 is from international migration in Missouri. 60%.
Sandoval says if immigration trends continue and birth and death rates hold, the state will see large population declines in the coming decades. I'm Kayvon Mansouri, St. Louis Public Radio.
Illinois Congresswoman Robin Kelly believes she's got the experience to come out on top of the primary to replace retiring Senator Dick Durbin. The Chicago-area Democrat will need to beat Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy and Lieutenant Governor Julia Stratton in the contest. STLPR's Will Bauer talked with Kelly on the Politically Speaking podcast.
Kelly served in the Illinois State House in the mid-2000s and has been in the U.S. House since 2013. She also briefly chaired the state Democratic Party in the early 2020s. Strengthening gun control has been a key theme of her time in politics. Kelly's campaign platform for the vacant U.S. Senate seat is what she calls people over profits.
And it's about time that millionaires, billionaires, and corporations, you know, the well-off and well-connected, pay their fair share of taxes. That's just the bottom line.
With extra tax revenue, Kelly says the federal government could invest in more affordable housing and provide health care options to everyone. Kelly recently made headlines for introducing articles of impeachment against Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem. Early voting begins Thursday. I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
To hear the full interview, you can find Politically Speaking at stlpr.org or wherever you get podcasts like this one. January brought a wave of restaurant closings to the St. Louis region. Canyon Cafe closed inside Plaza Frontenac Mall. Rock Hill's Hacienda shuttered. And Robust Bistro and Wine Bar closed in Webster Groves after a sale fell through. Local chain Session Taco shut its Kirkwood location. And High Point Drive-In closed locations in Baldwin, Edwardsville, and O'Fallon, Illinois. In opening news, though, St. Louis saw the return of Persian restaurant Cafe Natasha on South Grand. Longtime Cherokee Street nonprofit Bridge Bread opened a second location on the Del Mar Loop. And Tower Grove Farmers Market favorite Scald found a permanent home in Lindenwood Park. You can find more restaurant openings and closings at stlpr.org. Greg Favor has spent most of his professional life in public service, including a decade with the St. Louis Fire Department. 4 weeks ago, he returned to city employment to head the City Emergency Management Agency. Its previous permanent leader, Sarah Russell, was fired in August for their performance after the May 16th tornado. Favor told St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Littman he took the SEMA commissioner job because he cares about the place where he was raised.
There have long been needed investments in our public safety architecture, not just at SEMA, but across the board. And it felt like a time to actually come in and have some years where we can get some really substantive work in on an area that desperately needs it and is really important to our public safety.
You've been involved in some of the emergency response for years. How has your time so far leading this agency reshaped your understanding of that agency?
When I was first approached about interest in taking this job, I would have told you that there were substantive improvements needed in the actual public safety work, the emergency management policy and procedure, the planning process, the mitigation process, the preparedness process. What I can tell you now, having just finished my fourth full week with the agency, is that there are substantive organizational pieces that have not been in place that need to be in place. SEMA has been underfunded and understaffed since its inception. And I've been very clear with both the mayor's staff, the mayor, and the director of public safety that we either need to right-size the organization so that we are handling what an emergency management agency should be handling, or we need to right-size the mission.
How far off of what would be needed to truly have a city emergency management agency staffed and funded to the level you would want to see are we right now?
SEMA, as it stands today at the end of January, is 6 full-time employees, 3 of which, one of which is me, are filled. We need at minimum 11 to 12 people to manage just the basic trains of emergency management for a city this size.
I am sure you have read that report on the May 16th siren failure multiple times. What questions to you were left unanswered by that report?
I think they used a really good line early in the report, and they said it was cascading failures. I would say that in the last 4 weeks of being at the agency, that makes a lot of sense to me. What I think is left unanswered in the report, and what is my job to work with the Director of Public Safety, the Mayor's Office, the team at SEMA today, is to figure out how far back those cascading failures go, work to uncover them, and then work to put them in place.
In those first 4 weeks that you've had on the job, have you learned anything that contradicts or adds to the findings of the report?
I haven't found anything that contradicts anything in the report yet. I do think that there are elements of the report that we need to dive a little bit deeper on and pressure test. As highlighted as they were in the report, I want to dig in a little bit more and see if what is there is as bad as how it reads, or if it is something that just needs to be worked over with a fresh set of eyes.
What concerns you the most about the role the federal government has taken in disaster preparedness, response, and recovery under the current Trump administration?
As somebody who has worked with FEMA since 2004-ish, I would be disappointed if we saw substantive changes to their structure without consulting emergency management and public safety professionals at length.
That was SEMA Commissioner Greg Favor speaking with STLPR's Rachel Lippman. Our Fred Ehrlich edited that piece. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway.